This morning I want to talk about dealing with the mother frog syndrome. I know you don't have a clue about what I want to talk about. I really wish I can use titles very well. You know, when you announce bogus titles, can give you a lot of names. People will be curious to know what. I will start by telling you a little story of the mother frog. The mother frog, mother and frog syndrome. You know what syndrome is? Okay. Of all animals have animalistic reactions. The moment you see them, the first thing you see, the moment you just see an animal, the first thing they want to run away from you. Even lions, snakes, they want to take a detour. If you catch any of them, they will struggle and struggle and struggle to get out of your hands. But the mother frog, if you catch a frog, and you have a bowl, a pot of water in your hand, if you're struggling to live and you drop in that water, you will feel at home. You will feel at home, and it will stay there. An experiment has shown that it will jump around and be just hopping around inside the water there. If you put that water on top of gas and make it very low, the frog will be relaxed. Gradually begin to increase it. The first time the frog is going to make frantic effort to get out of that thing is when the water is getting hot. And that's the problem we have in the church today. That our understanding of the Christian life, our understanding of church and the faith, the Christian faith, our understanding of it is the mother frog style. It is more reactionary than proactive. What we are doing is that we react to things. In Mark chapter 16, in verse 15, he says, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel. And those who believe this sign shall follow anyone that believes. They cast out devils, they heal the sick, and all that." When John was talking about the same commission, he says, "Feed my sheep." You remember in John chapter 21, when Jesus was now restoring Peter, "Feed my sheep, feed my lamb, feed my sheep." But when you get to Luke chapter 24, when he's now talking about this, he said, "Tarry ye in Jerusalem until you are endowed with power from on high. And then you will be witnesses to the things you have seen." You'll be my witnesses to the things you have seen. You witness what you have seen, what you have experienced. You talk about them. But when you get to Matthew, if you come back to Matthew, because it's not really arranged chronologically, okay? But when you get to Matthew chapter 28, you will see the summation of the Great Commission. It is not go and make converts. It is go and make disciples of the whole world, of the whole nations. It is discipleship. And when he says go and make disciples, he emphatically stressed how the process will be. Teaching them to observe everything that I have taught you. And in that order, in that sequence, with that understanding, I am with you till I come back. In other words, if we win souls and bring them to church, it's just a portion of assignment that is complete. It's not completed yet. There had to be a process by which people are taught and put through a school, through a process where they become disciples. That is why you will never see an act of apostles apart from that chapter 11 verse 26 where they were called Christians first in Antioch. Every other place they were saying there was a certain disciple named Ananias and there were certain disciples. Everybody there was called disciple. A disciple means a consistent follower. A disciple means an adherent. The one that continues to adhere, following the laid down principle and pattern of the master. An ardent follower, consistent follower, persevering follower, persistent follower, who not only follows but listens, learns, and does the things he's being told. That is who a disciple is. If that is the case, how many of us are disciples? We can be disciples. Some people will say, well, I'm a disciple. Disciple of men. I'm a disciple of apostles so and so. I'm a disciple of bishops so and so. I'm a disciple of them. Are you a disciple of the Lord? Because there's standard for it. Over 50 years ago, Sadana Osokoto said, from Maiduguri, he's going to drop from Sokoto, Maiduguri, he will drop the Quran in the ocean. Do you know the meaning of that? He's going to go from the north to the west, to the west coast, and to the south coast, to drop the Quran in the ocean. In other words, Islam is going to spread. The design was made many years ago. Do you know that the center of Nigeria, the exact location that is the center of Nigeria, is where the central mosque is built? If you go to Google Earth and you just see the map of the world, go to the map of Nigeria, it will take you to the center of the city. Bap, it will take you to the center of Nigeria. That is the exact point where the central mosque is built. It was deliberate, it was designed like that, to put Islam at the center of Nigeria. It is a product of many years of planning. When you talk about people who have foresight, who plan evil well ahead, and they have enough patience to follow it up, the Muslims are excellent at that. They will come into your place just like Pastor was talking about. Just the indigenous are now waking up to the reality of the fact that they've sold out their lands to these people. They will come here and marry your daughters and thereby gain the access to the throne. Because when your daughter gives birth to you, they say she, this child also has, he has the royal blood to gain access to the throne. So they can Islamize the place, take it over. So they put the central mosque. It was designed at the center of Nigeria. If you Google, if you go to Google Earth and then you see it puts Nigeria, just keep zooming on it. So, pop, it takes you to the central mosque. Sir, do you have any statistics about how many Christians have converted to Islam here, or how many have left the town? Another, any organization published something like that here? We have statisticians among us. Nobody is interested in circulating documents, circulating research materials, so that scientifically we can compute what has happened to the church, what has happened to the indigenous that are Christian, what has happened, whether we are gaining ground or losing ground. Nobody is saying anything about that. How do you help the pastors walking on ground? How then do we reach out? How do we know whether we are gaining ground or losing ground? In Jos, for instance, through some private effort, I discovered we are losing ground in Jos. That indicates this man to ambassador something, there. Most of those names you hear in Jos, they were all Christians. They went to missionary school, they were born Christians. They changed later, Islamized. And it's like he is showing me that in Jos, most of the youth, they have discovered now that it looks as if we have not been able to disciple them well enough. So they discover that when they get to the village, they cook them from the village, and you shoot at them, the thing doesn't work. And they can come and kill you. So they went back again to traditional religion to start collecting powers to come and do battle in the town. We are losing ground. By chance, I saw in Adosmi, I saw somebody drop the paper there, and I just picked it. I'm a very voracious reader. I mean, I love information, and I saw this, and I saw association of something Islamic, this, and they went into political awareness. They're always planning 5 years, 10 years ahead. It was over 20 something years ago. They met in Jos, and they said, although it is haram, it is an abomination for you to marry an unbeliever, carefully, to marry a Christian or something. But they discovered that the best way for Islam to dwarf Christianity is to marry our girls. And started unwittingly, deliberately teaching their youth. They disobeyed that verse of Quran. They started teaching their youth. Worldwide, it's a worldwide project. Today, the record shows that Islam is the fastest growing religion in America. In America, fastest growing religion. And there are people who have been to church. Today, you go to Afipo, the number of Igbos converting to Islam is alarming. Alagi, Naji. Alagi Chukuma. Where did you hear Alagi Chukuma before? We're losing ground so fast. Go to Enugu and see the central mosque there. I went to the National Assembly and I heard a young man preaching on the television, on the radio in their mosque there. He's an evil man. Quoting Quran, quoting Bible, and just muddling everything together. If you ask an ordinary Muslim, the first thing that happens when they get converted to Islam, the first thing they will tell you is the five pillars of Islam. You have to fast. You have to visit Hajj. You have to give your tithe, zakat. You have to do five times prayer, and you must declare your faith and confess it. Every little Muslim that comes in the first day, they know these five pillars of Islam. Let me ask you, what is the pillars of discipleship? How many of you know? Hey, that's what I'm talking about. We have converts. We don't set up a deliberate framework to be sure that before a person settles down for a month in our church, he knows the pillars of discipleship. Because he didn't call us to make converts. We have thwarted or we have twisted the divine intentions from discipleship to converts. And until we get it right, set it in order so that everybody, see what I tell pastors, say, develop an outline in need and teach it for 8 weeks every Sunday. Let every member preach it from your altar, teach it from your altar as the main teaching for the service. Let every member be able to say, these are the pillars of Christianity. These are the pillars of of discipleship. Because if we understand that, some of these things that take center stage of our messages will not. If we let, when I got converted, sir, can I tell you something? Without trying to offend your theology, I didn't know about tithes. No. Nobody taught me. Nobody followed me up. You know what I read? I read in the New Testament, and I said, Jesus said, except you do this, you can't be my disciple. I said, this, you do this. So I discovered that I don't owe God tithe. I owe him all.
All.
So I said, okay. He wants everything. I was using my salary to go to conferences, using my salary to plant churches. Nobody said, well done. And I didn't look for well done from anybody. I was planting churches, going to villages, traveling everywhere, spreading the good news. And we were traveling with the late Gigo. We were entering bushes everywhere, planting churches with our salaries, because we understood that all, whatever a slave has belongs to the master. And we are bond servants. And because we are bond servants, bond servants are the ones that deliberately said, I am not going to leave. I love my master. And you take his ear and take to the door and nail it there. He had a choice to say, I won't follow this master. But he said, I'm not leaving. I love my master. And because I love my master, every other thing I love at the same time. So no problem. And they decide, because born slaves, so whatever he has, the slave belongs to the master, then his children and wife, under everything, all his property, they belong to the master. What's the percentage of your love to your wife? 10%? What's the percentage of your giving to your husband? 10%? If we teach discipleship properly, people will not pay tithe. Because the man who brought 10,000 naira out of his 100,000 will drop 30,000 at once. He will bring 10,000, he will bring 5,000 for offering every fellowship day. And by the time he gets back home, he will say, ah, Pastor, what, you say you want to do this, he will write another check. If we understand what it takes to be a disciple, and we lay it as foundational, and understand it is foundational. You can't be a disciple unless you understand these principles. Just like a Muslim, you would don't need, just tap them. Five pillars of Islam. Everybody knows. They begin with five prayers a day. 5-10 prayers a day. You go into fasting, they are doing one now. Then you have the money, you have the strength and resources, you have to go to Hajj. Then you have to confess of faith. Then you have to give your zakat. Do alms. So, what are the pillars of discipleship? Number one, a supreme love for God and one another. A supreme love for God and one another. Supreme. When you talk about supreme, nothing supersedes that. Total. Complete devotion. Like the man pastor talked, the young man that pastor talked about, who will have to literally jump a physical fence, barrier, to get a point to keep appointment with his father in heaven. A supreme love. Matthew chapter 10. Luke chapter 14. Verse 26. Luke 14:26, and John 13:35. He says, if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And then John 13:35 says, by this, he said, by this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if you have love If you have love one to another. Do you see the schism in the body of Christ today? The division. The Methodist faith. The Baptist faith. The Pentecostal faith. Didn't Ephesians chapter 4 says, we all have one faith, one God, and one Father of all? Where do you get a different faith? That we can't love each other because we don't have supreme love for God. Supreme love is loving God to the point that if he says, stay in Maiduguri in the midst of violence, I will stay. If God says, this is what I want you to do, no excuses, yes, Lord. You know, one of the greatest contradictions of Peter's life, I love that guy so much. He has a lot to teach us. Even after God was through with him, he has witnessed miracles, he has seen signs and wonders, and he is now in Acts of Apostles. You know one of his contradictions? Acts chapter 10, when he began to see, he saw a vision, and then he said, rise, all for food, dead beasts, and all kinds of animals that were ceremonially unclean to an Israeli, to a Jew. The Lord said to him, rise, Peter, kill and eat. He said, not so, Lord. That's contradiction in terms. That's contradiction in terms. Because when to be Lord means to be ruler and controller of everything. To be Lord means the governor. The owner of everything. If he is the owner, if he is the controller of everything, if he is the Lord, it cannot be not so. It has to be so. So if he is Lord, it has to be so. So you cannot use the two words, not so, Lord. That's contradiction in terms. Is anybody flowing with me? The moment you can say, Lord, the supreme love for God. You love God so passionately. You know, in 1987, I traveled home with my fiancée then. And I was talking to my mom, well, this is the lady I'm going to marry, and this and that. And my father was raising hell because she's from Bende. You know, those old Bende. And that Bende, it was in the days of Anini the arm robber. And my father called my mother and said, have you seen your son? He brought a woman. He said, that's the woman he's going to marry. He said, they say, where did he come from? He said, people will come to greet me. They say, I say, who is this man? He say, he's the person he said he want to marry. They say, from where? He say, he's from the town of Anemi. Oh my God. It's Anemi sister. She's now Delta now. Okay, so I wish there was Delta that time. Anemi's body would have been less on my head. And you know what? My mother called me to the room, said, my son, of all my children, you are the closest to me. You know what I suffered? I died when I was in your pregnancy 6 months. I died before they buried me in the evening. A prophet came and said, you are going to, because of you, I will come back alive. And you are the son and the prophet of the Most High God. And because of you, after they planned to bury me in the evening, he told them what to do. They did it. And I came back alive. I gave back to you. That's why your name is Olusegun Ekundayam. That's why we give you that name. You are not rebellious. There's nothing I tell you that you don't do. What has come over you now? Will you listen to what I'm saying now? I said, Mommy, I wish I could. I said, the mistake I made was that I handed over my life to God. And I told him he owns everything before you raise this objection. I said, now I have a big trouble. That is how to collect back my life that I already gave him. So I'm going to do what you say. Only on the condition that if you can go to God and ask for permission to release me to do what you say. I don't know whether you understand. And I said, Mommy, but there's a better option I can offer you. You have 7 children. I'm just one. Use me to pay tithe to God. Samuel's mother had only one, and he gave that one to God. Give me out of 7. And then trust God that whatever good could have come out of this one will come out of the rest 6. Because you have lost one. My father came to him and said, you didn't hear. He said, God sent him to go and marry somebody from Maninista. And you are still talking. One man wanted to help God in the Bible. God kill him. Oh. Somebody wanted to help God and talk the ark of God. God kill him. You want to die? It was inconceivable that I could look at my mother in the face and tell her no. But because of the supreme law for God, I've heard him. I cannot say anything no. I can't say no to you, Lord. When your love for God is so supreme, it will transcend just your mouth. It will reflect in the way you love the brethren. You know, anytime we heard of explosion, I always call you. And I say, what? How are you? Are you safe? Is everybody? And all that. Because if we claim we really love one another, and yet we don't have relationship, we can't talk to each other, then we have problems. If we love God well enough, you'll be able to love your neighbor. Because there's nothing the person will do to you that you cannot overlook because of God. Excuse me, sir. If we develop this topic alone on the supreme love for God and one another and make it a whole teaching, the entire universe works by the law of love. He taught you that day. If we develop that before you settle down in church, that's the first thing you will hear. Can you imagine the kind of love? Nobody will encourage you to carry somebody while you are going home. You know it's a necessity. Because if that brother is not comfortable, then you are not comfortable. Paul said, an effectual door was opened unto me for ministry, but I could not take it because I didn't see my brother Titus. When you lose sleep because of another brother, supreme love for God will create those things in your heart. The day Pastor Kemeni told me he was going to see him, that he was in town. What did I do? I called him. I said, how dare you come to my territory and I don't know? I said, how dare you? If you are coming to Abuja, I was there before you. Let me just thank you, Lord, for bringing one of us here. How dare? I said, you will offer goats and monkeys on the sacrifice. To atone for this crime you just committed against me. I have not been here before. I don't know too many things. I don't even know the state he comes from. But from the day I met him, I know this man is my brother. And there's no way he will come here. If I can make life a little comfortable for him, that I will not do it. Because I love the man he's serving. He happens to be the father of both of us. Is anybody understanding what I'm saying? So that if everybody knows, you can't be a disciple unless you have supreme love for God and one another, you know malice will be less in church. Because it's the pillar of discipleship. Yes, sir. Number two. A willingness to forsake all for him. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsakes not all that he had, he cannot be my disciple. Luke 14:33. Luke 14:33. Forsaking all. See, this whole idea of tithe. Thank God, though. But if it's such an important teaching, the New Testament will at least teach it. The New Testament didn't teach about tithing. The twice he talked about in Hebrews, he said Levites gave tithes in the loins of Abraham. So the twice is mentioned there is in that place. Levites gave tithes in Abraham, and then they receive tithes. We're not after Levitical order. The order of the New Testament is all. Does that mean then I will not have any money to spend? No. It means that you are in position to surrender all if he wants all. And whenever he wants it. It means you give. Not because pastor prompted you or propped you or they talk, that everything is laid down. There's no way then I can have 100,000 and I think of giving God 10,000. If I have 100,000, I won't think of spending only 10,000 naira on my wife. My wife is such a very fast person. She's very fast. She's very masculine. She's is into everything. So I used to say, madam, calm down, calm down. Wait, just calm down. Just calm down. Calm down. And so, and I would do some things that women usually should do. I would buy them and I say, you need this one. You need that one. He said, when I see you shave, when I did. Now, if I don't shave for 2 days, 3 days, and beard had grown and white, he said, oh, you are not looking good at all. You are ugly. You are looking, you need to shave this thing now. And then, you know, when you shave, oh, your face just look. I said, take away. So, I said, thank you for it. So, one day, she noticed the process. I rubbed cream. I took the blade. I shaved. I came out of the bathroom and I rubbed aftershave, and then after the thing, bonds and all that, I rubbed the lotion before I did. He said, see the number of things you have to use at the same time, like woman. I said, every day you demand that I look the way I'm looking. I have to go through this process. I said to her, madam, beauty is expensive. So every time she's talking, you say, like you used to say. One day she said she wanted to go and do her hair. She wanted to buy this weaver, and this one is 2,000, and this other one, and I have to buy this, and this, everything. I say, how much do you need? He say 4,000 something. I say, okay, I'll give you 5,000. But then they say, Kai, but all of that, why would we go and spend 5,000 on this? Anyway, like you used to say, beauty. I said to her, anything that will make you look good, don't tell me it's expensive. The price of it is low. If I buy something, you say, how much did you buy this? I say, is it that important as to why did I buy it? It's not how much I bought it. I bought it because of love. So if it is sold for 10 naira and I bought it 200,000, it is because I love you. I'm willing to spend that on you. Period. So just shut your mouth. Don't ask me for the price. The price is love. Is anybody understanding what I'm saying? Forsaking all. See, let me show you quickly. Run through that. That's the foundation Jesus laid. Whosoever will serve me, he must forsake all. And what did this man say in chapter 10? Chapter 10, verse 32, Peter. He said, Master, we have forsaken all and follow you. What shall we have? He said, you have a hundredfold of it. When Zacchaeus came down from that tree after Jesus became a guest to him and then suddenly appeared. You remember what he said? He said, Lord, half of my goods I give to the poor. But the remaining half, everybody have collected anything of labor, I will give them times 5. How much is remaining? How much did he give? Is anybody understanding the foundation of the New Testament? Matthew 13 and then verse 44, verse 5. The kingdom of God is like a treasure hidden in a field, which when a man has found, he does what? Sell all. Certain things are free in the kingdom. Most things are not. Salvation free. It's free. Salvation is free. Healing is free. Blessings free. Everything God has done, free. Free, in quote. To enjoy them, you have to be willing to meet God halfway. So most things in the kingdom are not really free. Because it's possible to just desire to be one of the apostles. But you have to be a faithful Barnabas first. Willing to sell your land and lay it at the apostles' feet. Then you can buy into apostleship. And then when you have a criminal wife and husband who want to buy into apostleship, cheap, they will keep back part of the price and then pay with their lives. Do you understand what I'm saying? Maybe these are people, if you want to access the kingdom, the treasures of the kingdom is hidden in a field and you must sell all. It doesn't mean that you sell the whole of your square part shop, you sell out the whole of your cloth and all that and get it. What it means is that everything happened to be sold. It says a man's wealth, a man's good does not, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of things he possesses. You can own them, you can't possess them, because God is the possessor of heaven and earth. You can own them. And having to own them means that it's under the possessor, that when he needs it, you don't argue with him. Is anybody following me? So that the argument between me and God, Lord, you are telling me this. It's non-existent. Because in any case, everything belongs to him. Psalm 75, somewhere down in verse 16, he said, for all things serve you. For all things are, he said, even the stars and the moon in their courses, in their ordinances, he said, for all are thy servant. Even the stars and the moon, they are God's servant. And so if I need the sun to stand still and moon stand still, they have to respond while I'm doing God's work. Do you understand what I'm saying? One day I went into my closet and I gave out about 7 suits. Willing the next Saturday. My wife was actually afraid. He said, I believe God show you, say you won't die. What is all this one? And I just gave this thing. I gave this. And I just was sharing the suits and all that. I told God this. If you can trust me with anything, it will get to where you want it. It will get to where you want it and to who you want. There's no argument between God and I. And so whether should I give it now? I don't really. No, it doesn't exist. Because from the foundation of forsaking all. No, I don't like telling people this. I have not paid tithe in more than 15 years of my life. You know why? Most of what I have, everything belongs to God. So when I'm giving to God, I don't give 10%. And I have friends now. I have one of my friends and partners who had a covenant with the Lord that I want to give you 90% of what I have. And 10% will be enough, over and above what I need to survive. As of today, she's operating at 60%. Whenever she gets her payment, 60% goes to God. Very often, everything I have, 100% just goes in there. 100%. But where he does not demand, that is, I have the privilege of taking care of the family and doing some other thing, you can tell that greater than 50% of you will have already gone into ministry. Gone into doing the work of God, touching people's life, transforming people's life. By the grace of God, I have pastors and ministry that were even supporting. Despite the fact that I don't stay on the church to collect that and offering. But that there are pastors and ministries whose survival depends on us for now. If God can trust you to get it to where He wants, He will put it in your hands. Number 3. A disciple should be as his master. The disciple is not above his master, nor the servant above his Lord. It is enough for the disciples that he be as his master, and the servant as his Lord. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more shall they call them of his household? Matthew chapter 10, 24, 25. Matthew 10, 24, 25. Verses. A disciple has to be as his master. So we're not teaching you to be like Christ. We're teaching you that you are Christ. Because he's the one living in you. No more do you say, I don't have grace to do that. If you don't know how to tap into that grace, ask questions. You know the problem we have in church? We are wont to destroy one another when the other people fall. Or when their fall is made public. Your own fall is private. You know there is some inconsistency in your life that you are praying and fighting to straighten out. They're looking at me like that. Let me ask you a question. How many of you will like your thoughts and your personal struggles to be put on videotape and it will be sold here on Sunday morning? The things that goes on in your heart and your personal struggle. How many of you will like it on videotape? And then we will bring it here on Sunday morning to say, Alekai. This is not what he said. Babas, how do they do? So we have those contradictions that we deal with. When someone else's contradictions suddenly come to the surface or to the public eye, we join the enemy to destroy. That's what I talked about in Obadiah Commission. Christians are the only Christians, not disciples. Not disciples. Christians. Because real disciples won't do that. Christians are the only people that join the enemy to fight. They are the only Christian soldiers are the only military in the world that join the enemy to fight their own people. And they see they are wounded and afflicted and they join the enemy with their mouth, slandering them, shooting them, just to kill them. All other military in the world, what they are trained to do is to carry the wounded and then be defending themselves with their guns. And then they'll be shooting, and they carry the wounded on their back. And they'll be shooting until they take him to a recovery point. Now that we destroy all our generals, who is going to command our battle? It's part of the cornerstone of that book of Obadiah Commission. How you can stand in your place and not become an instrument in the hand of the devil. We've got to be like the master. Whoa. Number four. Ability to endure persecution and hardship. Ability to endure persecution and hardship. And whosoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Luke 14:27. You see where the problem is? An average believer today cannot endure anything. And that's why Peter was, Paul was talking in Hebrews. He said, looking unto Jesus. And then he goes on to say, but you have not even resisted unto against sin, striving, resisted unto blood. You have not resisted sin to the point where you strive and it costs your blood to overcome. An average Christians today, we have no resistance for anything. They complain, they grumble. If things don't work their way, they always just say, that sister spoke to me. In fact, I'm so angry, I'm going to confront him because I don't. And they just keep talking and I just keep wondering. I say, are these ones disciples? A disciple knows how to bear his cross, square up his shoulder, and walk off. If we don't make room for individuals' weaknesses and failures, when are we going to? Is it when we are already perfected up there in heaven? How many of you like to eat rice and beans? When you put it in a plate, they are located in different parts of your plate, isn't it? the man doesn't start to eat from all around. He starts from the front. And then he's scooping them. Scooping it. Then, some beings at the back will be making fun of the ones in the front. And say, hey, look at them, they swallow them. Oh, they swallow them. What's the aim of the eater? The aim of the devil is to swallow all of us. It is only in church that three pregnant women in labor ward can make fun of each other. Have you ever seen that in the hospital? You are laboring, I'm laboring, we have attacked, we are facing the same devil, and we're doing everything to overcome our trials and temptations, and then you make fun of another person. Go to labor ward and learn a lesson. I see the woman say, hey, madam, God will help you. God will help you. And the other one say, hey, sorry. You say, ah, me, I've been here for 2 days. The thing is coming and going. And go. The other one will say, hmm. You say, and then immediately come out. Hey, they say, hey, madam, we rejoice with you. Please pray for us too. They become prayer partners. Muslim and Christians. In the labor world. Now, how many of you women, how many of you can confirm what I'm saying? Wave your hand at me. Okay. I mean, when my wife was going to have the first guy, she was capable of the shindabahori and the boss. So the doctors, they've never had that. They just were calling each other. They said, one woman is speaking Hebrew, he's speaking Greek. They were coming. Ridiculous people. And everybody left their ward and they came there to hear the woman that was speaking Hebrew. And when she delivered, and the people say, madam, we rejoice with you, we're happy. Say, don't worry, God will do your own too. I said, see the way they counsel and encourage each other. But we in church, as we are laboring to enter into that thing, trying to press forward until we get perfected, putting on until we enter into the things we are looking, we make fun of each other's weaknesses and failures. As if we ourselves are not struggling with something. You know, some of these dramatic personae on television. Before you came to church, you and your wife, you have been quarreling. Even before you came to church, you quarrel. Is it? Am I right? I don't know you before. Are you stupid? Pastor, you know, get something where you come to church, you and your wife know they talk well. Why are you not making it look as if it's a strange thing? And the way they humiliate those people, I just wonder, they're not operating by the Spirit of God. Because the Spirit of God treats people with respect and respect their will. How do you come to resort those people? The Spirit of God is the Spirit of grace. Oh yes, if you are prophesying from the point of the judgment seat, that's an Old Testament mentality. You prophesy under the law. You see, the Old Testament prophet and New Testament prophet are two different people. The Old Testament prophet prophesied from the point of law and judgment. New Testament prophesied from the point of mercy and grace. Old Testament prophet will hunt for your sin. New Testament prophet will hunt for your righteousness. Old Testament prophet will torment you. New Testament prophet will mentor you. Old Testament prophet walk alone. New Testament prophet is one among the brethren. So you can't deal with me in the New Testament after the pattern of the Old Testament. I walk out on you. Because it's not biblical. And you and your wife, you used to quarrel. Any family, they don't quarrel. You are Yoruba man, you marry a neighbor woman. You know there are two different cultures? A Yoruba man, you didn't give him food, but you respect him, you have satisfied him. Ah, Oluwa me. And even if he doesn't mean it from the heart, Oluwa me. Just even if it's not from my heart, he say, ah, that omodada, omodada. Whereas the Igbo sister will come and say, nah, Biko, put your hand in your pocket and give me some money. They say, what? What? And the Yoruba wife say, "Oluwa mi, ejo mo ni disile marun." So he would. So if these two cultures are going to collide, it is a wall of difference. You are bound to adjust. So it is not a word of knowledge, it's a word from knowledge. There's a difference from the word of knowledge and the word from knowledge. Are you following what I'm saying? Don't even know where I go to. Whatever I say is good. Ability to endure persecution and hardship. Have I mentioned that? A willingness to continue in the world. Such consistency that produces knowledge, revelation, and deeper understanding. A willingness to continue in the world. Such consistency that produces knowledge, revelation, and deeper understanding of God. Acts chapter 2, verse 42. Acts 2:42. Then John 8, 30 to 32. John 8, 30 to 32. And he spake these words. As he spake these words, many believed on him. Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, "If ye continue in my word, then are you my disciples indeed." Not only in word, indeed. "And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Consistency that produces result. And Acts of the Apostles, he said in chapter 2, verse 42, he says, "And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, and in breaking of bread and prayers." Consistency. These people that come here today, you can't hold them. They're like Omole, war gecko. You understand? You know war gecko? That sort of lizard that is very... If you hold the tail, it will leave the tail with you and leave. There's a young man, the brother handles my camera. He suddenly turned and he leaves. And then when he said, "Daddy, Your Excellency, sir. Your Excellency, sir, he will come to me." He comes some days ago, he said, "Daddy, I miss you." I say, "I know." I told him, I said, "Kayode." He said, "Sir." I said, "Your word doesn't mean anything." I said, "And I don't have any respect for you. Until you say, 'Daddy, I'm coming 5 o'clock. And 5 o'clock, you are there.'" I said, "Okay, now you go. We're going to collect jobs from people and you are working into your studio. And now you told them I'm bringing it on Wednesday. If by Tuesday the appointment on Wednesday is going to change, then you've got to call them and say, 'We have this problem, it will delay for another day.'" I said, if your word don't mean anything, forget about it, I'm not interested. And then one day I just saw he called me and said, "Daddy, are you at home?" He said, "I'm coming now." I didn't even think about him. I just kept doing my thing because I didn't believe what he said. And he landed. The following day, he said, he was leaving. He said, "Sir, I will come today. I will come tomorrow to come and round up this thing." You know what? Before he had told me he would come tomorrow, the next time I was seeing him is 2 weeks after. So I won't say anything. I didn't say anything. The following day he came. And then I said, "Oh boy, something is happening to you." He said, "That don't you notice I'm changing?" He said, "I want my word to mean something to you." I said, "Have I ever spoken anything to you that I didn't follow through? If there's anything you don't get me to do, is to make promises. Because if I already say it, I put everything on the line to fulfill it. Why are we so inconsistent in the world? Why is our life so contrary? Why can't you be trusted with money?" I went to a church, a bishop church, another thing. And I went there. They said they wanted our CDs and all that. We went to about 50 something of them, or about 80 something of them and all that. They sold a number of them and all that thing. But the money and the entire CD disappeared. The bishop said, "No, it can't be man of God. Till this evening, it has yet to suffice." Church. That's a church full of Christians. A place where you have disciples. If anything is missing, they will pick it and report to the office to be announced. Even the people of other religion, look at the other young man that was, the man that was honored in Abuja. They gave him 32 inch television, and the people gave him 30,000, and then they gave him, along with the plasma 32 inch, they bought him DSTV decoder and paid for 2 years the subscription. He just saw this a taxi man. He saw they left a bag in his car when he dropped them out. He took that and traced them, got to the address, another thing, and delivered. They were all hard currencies. He saw it, he didn't touch. They gave him 30,000, gave him a plasma 32 inch, and bought him DSTV and charged it. And whether they said they were going to give his son scholarship. He's a Muslim. Recently, sir, we have one Akwa Ibom person that also did similar thing. When are we going to have disciples that are consistent in their life? That they say what they mean, I mean what they say. That we will not find what they say and what they mean to be different things. Number what? An unflinching commitment to the master and his cause. Luke chapter 9, verses 57 to 62. Luke 9, 57 to 62. An unflinching commitment to the master and his cause. Say, Master, I will follow you. He said, let's go. He said, but let me go and bury my father first. The other one, follow me. Say, let me quickly text my equipment. Let me do this. Let me do that. See, when you have commitment, if you understand what discipleship means, is commitment to the point that every singular thing that is the master's course, you are found right at the center of it. That's what it means to be a disciple. Unflinching commitment to the master and his course. Number 7. Fruitful Christian life in every area. Fruitful Christian life in every area. John chapter 15 verse 8. John 15:8. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear fruit, ye bear much fruit, so shall you be my disciples. I've just compressed them. Some people put it in, some people, but this is the cardinal, these are the pillars of discipleship. Herein is my Father glorified. See, anything that makes you not able to bear fruit in your life does not portray you as a disciple. That's one thing you must contend for. You know what Paul said? When I gave diligence to, and when Jude said in verse 3, when he said, when I gave all diligence to write unto you, I have to remind you that you earnestly contend. You know what you are contending for? It's not that God will do something for you. What you are contending for is that the devil is trying to hinder what God has had for you, what God had in mind, what God has put together for you. And I want you to contend. Refuse the devil from and doubt and unbelief. Refuse it and make sure that you become fruitful. Fruitful in every area of your life. Be fruitful in your body, be fruitful in your business, be fruitful in your life, be fruitful as a child of God, be fruitful bringing people to the Lord, be fruitful in your finances, be fruitful in every, be fruitful in the knowledge of God, be fruitful in every area. He said, herein my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so shall you be my disciples. Fruit bearing is a pillar of discipleship. What I want to ask you is this. Are you a Christian or are you a disciple? Some people say, you want to know your disciples? You want to know true disciples? Wait on Sunday morning. When when Nigeria and Brazil are playing, you will know disciples. They will bring the television and say, let us kill the service today. Want to know disciples? When you hear there's a bomb blast, Boko Haram has struck, and you call for a vigil. Are you a disciple? Everything we've been talking about, the depth we've been digging these days, are fruits of discipleship. You will get to that depth and understand you can function well when you lay this foundation. Because Christ is in you. Everything is complete in you. Now you are going to dig it out. How are you going to dig it out if you don't have commitment? If you are not committed to the word, if you are not committed to live right, if you are not committed to bear fruit, if you are not committed to the values we are talking about, how are you going to manifest those things? Just like a pastor was reminding you. It's not that we are more anointed than you. It's that we have yielded more than you. The point of expression is the key. So everything that we're doing, you can do and yea, much more. If you can decide to be a disciple. So that this commitment, this supreme love for God, can be all. And you prove it. Until the day you look at money like this and say, money, I have given 20,000 in my life. That's the highest I've ever given. I have never given 50,000. Now I'm taking 50,000. I want to conquer you, money. I know this 50,000 will hurt me, but I want to show you that from now everything belongs to the Lord. And as a result of that, I am giving 50,000 as an evidence that I've conquered you, that everything belongs to God. Give it, Lord. Give it. Then you conquer that. I don't know how many times people have bought new clothes for me. I suppose the person bought new clothes like that. Just dress up and I know this thing. And then I want to tell, I just wear it and I try to test it, and the Holy Spirit said, it fits you well, it's not your own. I just take it and I roll it and I pack it there. And then one of them say, Pastor, I have one cloth to fit. My wife say, how could you do things like this? The person who bought it for you will be happy to see you. I said, he gave it to me. That person gave it to me. He's not supposed to supervise the day I wear it. And if because of that he's going to not give me anything, God will raise somebody else. But the day that thing was handed over to me, it became mine, not hers. And I don't have to take permission before I dispose of it. Because I have an understanding that God could be sending that thing through me to the person. I know the person that needs it, but the person giving me doesn't know. And God knows that if it can get to me, it will get to that person. Because he wanted that thing to cross over, but this man won't know. They've not met each other. They don't know each other. But the man who is between the two of them knows. So he passes it across to me for onward transmission to that person.